Welcome to another episode of Sharing the Hope. I'm your host, Patrick Mason from the Micah Mason Foundation. And today I am joined by Bridget O'Meara from the Mend a Heart. Is it Mend a Hearts or is it Mend a Heart?
Mend a Heart Foundation.
The Mend a Heart Foundation. So Bridget, welcome to the show. And I want to just give you an opportunity to tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thanks, Patrick. I appreciate you inviting me on and hosting me today. As Patrick said, my name is Bridget O'Meara. I am a heart mom. I'm the mom of three boys who are now, they're 19, 17, and I have a 14-year-old. I live outside of Chicago with my husband, and I work, my job outside of the home is working as a communications consultant doing employee benefit communications work. And then my husband and I also run the Mend a Heart Foundation, which is a nonprofit organization raising money to support congenital heart defect research and other initiatives that extend and enrich the lives of kids who are born with heart disease.
Good. So normally I open this up with the first question, and that's, how did you become involved in the world of CHD? But I think it's pretty obvious from, you're a heart mom. So I guess the question would be, how did your being a heart mom move you towards a founding foundation and becoming involved in the research world?
Well, our son Liam, who was our second son, was born with a pretty serious congenital heart defect that's called hypoplastic left heart syndrome. So he was essentially missing the left side of his heart, which is, you know, for those of you who aren't familiar, that's the side of your heart that pumps blood to the body. So after he was born, he underwent a series of open heart surgeries. And just through that experience, my husband and I felt compelled to give back to the heart community, the medical heart community that played an instrumental role in saving his life. And we felt pretty fortunate that, you know, we were one of the lucky families that we had a positive outcome. And so we just wanted to give back. And we felt like we were in a position that we could rally friends and family and raise some money to give back to congenital heart defect research. So Liam was born, he's now 17, and he was born in September of 2006. And he underwent his first surgery at about a week of age, and then his second surgery was semi-emergent, and that happened at 2 months of age. So once the dust settled after Liam's second surgery and he was healed, we started investigating setting up a charitable foundation. That probably happened in early 2008 that we started working, figuring out a name for the organization, our mission, which is to extend and enrich the lives of children born with heart disease. And then we also worked on getting our nonprofit tax exempt status set up, which that was a big feat to go through that whole process of filing and then getting approval of our 501c3 status. So I think like my husband and I both had a lot of nervous energy when Liam was a baby. There were some scary times when he was young, post-surgeries. And, you know, at that point in time, we had a lot of worries about, like, is he going to make it? So I think for us, we channeled that nervous energy into setting up the foundation, just because it was something that a lot of things at that time were still out of our control, but working on the foundation was something that we had control over, you know. So I think it was something that we felt we could help Liam as well as other kids and families who are in a similar situation.
Yeah, it's extraordinarily similar to my own story, although we didn't start till 2015, so it's just a little bit behind. But
your son was born with hypoplastic left heart syndrome, correct?
Yes. Yeah, Micah has hypoplastic left heart syndrome. That's all he has. We're very fortunate, but he has a very severe version. Like there's nothing there. some of the new stuff they've come out with, like the biventricular repair stuff, and that is not an option. Like he doesn't have anything. So
yeah, and that really wasn't an option when Liam was born. You know, Liam's a little bit older, and there were some heart centers that were doing some of those, attempting to do those repairs, but that was pretty early on and pretty experimental when Liam was a baby.
Yeah. I mean, even today, there's only a couple centers who will do them. And those teams seem to be pretty, I think Boston's and then Texas Children's are two of the big ones. So Men of Hearts has been going for about 15 years now. How have you changed, like, as an organization from getting started to where you are now? What's been sort of the big movements, I guess, in the organization?
We've always stayed true to our mission of extending and enriching the lives of children born with heart disease. So we started off like our first year, and I think we funded like $20,000 or $25,000 was our first research project that we funded. And then over the years, we've just grown in size in terms of our supporters and also in terms of the amounts of money that we've been able to raise, which has allowed us to provide a greater amount of money towards funding research. So to date, we've funded about $1.4, $1.5 million over the years. We also, in addition to giving money to research, we also fund Camp Odeon, which is a medically supervised camp in the Midwest that's specifically designed for children born with heart disease. And it allows them to have a summer overnight camping experience like any other kid. It's in a medically supervised environment. There's a cardiologist on staff. And then each cabin is manned by a nurse who makes sure the kids get their medicines. They also look closely at where they hold the camp. So cabins need to be air conditioned to, you know, allow for the heart kids who, you know, maybe can't be in 90, 100 degree heat. And then they just provide, you know, there's water sports and horseback riding, archery. So it's a really, really cool experience for the kids. And Camp Odeon also offers family camps. So an entire family could go away for a weekend, and there's programming for parents, siblings, and then the heart kids. And they also offer mom's retreats and dad retreats that gives parents an opportunity to gather with people who are going through a similar situation to them as a parent. So that's an organization that we've supported really from the very beginning, and we feel pretty passionate about what they're doing and believe in the programming that they offer. And then the other organization that we have funded for many years is, it's an organization called Young Hearts for Life. They're based in the Chicagoland area, and they offer high school cardiac screenings. So okay, there's children who are born with a congenital heart defect that doesn't present at birth. And sometimes, you know, those kids, you might hear about someone who drops dead of sudden cardiac death on a playing field, or, you know, just going about their normal life. And it's the result of a heart condition that they were unaware that they had. So Young Hearts for Life conducts these screenings within high schools. They're provided free, and they have a lot of volunteers that work for the organization that help conduct the screenings, and parents get involved in helping with the screenings. So that's something that we feel passionate about as well, where we help to support the screenings that they might be doing at particular high schools. And then we've also helped them in the way of providing funding for equipment that they need to do the screenings.
Michael Montgomery II, we did an interview with him. He was a defensive end for Texas A&M University. He went down on the field during a game. He had to be transported to Austin where they performed the surgery, but it was an undiagnosed CHD. And then after the pair, he went on to play for the Green Bay Packers. So,
yeah, it's pretty amazing. Every time they do a screening, they identify kids. I just volunteered this week at a screening that they did. And, you know, I think they screened about 500 kids, and two kids were identified who had undiagnosed heart conditions. So, like, you feel good about that, because I think, you know, hopefully we've helped support that screening that helped save two lives. And every week they're doing screenings throughout the school year and finding kids with undiagnosed heart conditions.
So Camp O'Dan?
Camp O'Dan, yes.
Camp O'Dan. Is that an Illinois-based organization? Where do they typically operate out of?
They are Stillwater, Minnesota. So they started off with, and they still have a camp. It's up like north of Minneapolis that they've had that camp for years. And then they did, I don't know how long ago it's been, probably a good 5 to 7 years ago, they established a location in like southern Wisconsin that serves kids from Wisconsin, Illinois. I think they have kids from Iowa, even Indiana attending camp. And then they do family camps both in the Minneapolis area as well as the Milwaukee area.
Okay, good deal.
Yeah, it's a really special place. The kids have a great time. And, you know, for some kids, they might not know other kids who have a heart condition. So there can be something pretty powerful when the kids get in a swimsuit and they see other kids, you know, everyone at the camp, the kids all have scars, and, you know, they share stories about the medicines they take or, you know, what their condition is. And now that Liam's older, you know, he stays in contact through text messages with kids that he's met and his cabin mates. So it's a pretty special place.
Yeah, I was interviewing a gentleman, Tyler Sajak, and he's got HLHS and he's in his 20s. He said the first time he met somebody who had his condition was in his late teens or in his 20s. You know, it wasn't something it kind of opened up a whole new world, effectively. And so I think the earlier you could have people with the same condition meet each other, the better.
Yeah, they even have like programming. The camps run, I think it's from first or second grade through your senior year of high school. And then because of the demand of the kids who are graduating out of the camps, they are looking at programming to keep those kids connected, you know, once they age out of attending camp. They can also go back to, once they reach the age, I think you have to be 21 to be a camp counselor. So that's an option, is that the kids can always return as camp counselors, which is a really cool experience for the counselors as well as the campers to have, you know, a counselor who has a condition like theirs.
Yeah, that's really neat. And that's something that's Tyler, he shares the single ventricle day, and that's something he's kind of working on, is sort of making it local so that people can get to your local. I wonder if I could hook him up with the camp folks and sort of build something on that.
That would be great. Yeah, I can connect you with Sarah Meslow, is the director of Camp O'Dan, and I'm sure she'd be a great person for you to interview on your podcast. And just a great person too, and always looking to broaden her connections in the heart community.
Okay, definitely. You have kind of a partnership, seems like, with these two organizations, which is awesome. Are there any research projects in particular that you funded through the organization that you're particularly proud of or that you want to highlight?
Over the years, we've been able to fund a number of different projects. So I wouldn't say that there's one in particular that stands out. I think what I feel good about is that you know, compared to organizations like the National Institute of Health or the American Heart Association, you know, we're small. And what we really try to do is help fund like young researchers who need, before they can go get millions of dollars from the NIH or the American Heart Association, they need to be able to show some initial results from their research. So I feel good that we're helping those younger researchers get some results under their belt that they can then take and use when they're applying for larger funding from those larger organizations. But we've, you know, funded research that's looked at how can heart kids, you know, are there medications that they can take that improve their ability to exercise? We've funded studies that look at, you know, are there ways to care for newborns to improve their outcomes? We've looked at a guy who's building a Fontan pump that would eventually, I don't know if it's going to happen in my lifetime, but it would for someone in Liam or Micah's position where they're missing that ventricle, it would take the place of the missing ventricle and serve as a pump. So he needed some bridge funding while he was waiting for larger grants from larger organizations. So we helped fund that. There's a study, it was surgeons helping surgeons. So it was where top cardiac surgeons were sharing their best practices of how they do certain types of surgical procedures. And so that was a way just to document and then share broadly within the heart community kind of best practices. And then we've also done studies in terms of working with psychologists. We also funded, it was a study looking at best ways to provide emotional support to families who have a child with heart disease, who might be going through surgeries. So it's a variety of like various science-based research studies and then studies like that where it was how to support families and best ways to provide support to families and parents.
Good deal. So the way our introduction happened was through a friend I have at the Children's Heart Foundation. So I wanted to ask what your relationship with the Children's Heart Foundation is.
Most recently, we partnered with, it was in 2021, we got connected. I work with and have become friends with some cardiologists who've helped me over the years in identifying positive, promising research studies. So as an organization, we would put out a request for proposals, and then we would get those back from researchers. And then we had a team that would evaluate the research proposals. So, you know, we're a small organization, all volunteer based, and that's a time consuming process to do on your own. Right. And it's a very important process. And so just looking at ways to keep our organizations just, you know, existing, operating, but make things kind of lighten our load. We decided to partner with the Children's Heart Foundation and leverage their medical review board to help us in identifying what research we could fund. So it was really a great partnership for us because they have a large board of very esteemed cardiologists and others who in the medical community who help them in evaluating a large number of grant proposals that they get in. So, you know, we really appreciate their support and helping us identify, you know, our most recent research study that we funded.
It's mirrored our initial interest in the Children's Heart Foundation because once I started actually fundraising, I said, well, who am I giving this money to? The concept of doing, you know, request for proposals and then review was a little daunting. You know, I'm not a doctor. I'm an engineer. My wife's a veterinary doctor. So we probably could have muddled through it, but having the Children's Heart Foundation already have that structure, I think, was important to us and the reason we partnered with them as well.
And I think, too, you know, everyone that they have on that medical board, they're busy people. So if there is a way that people like you and I can come together with them, I just think it's in the best interest of everyone in the heart community to, I don't know, be efficient in the use of our time and resources and everyone's brain power to figure out how best to fund the research that's going on out there.
Yep. And so it's interesting that you guys connected with them in 2021, because that was the same time frame we did. I remember Barb was the CEO at the time, I want to say. And we caught her on a research call, basically. They were talking about Cardiac Networks United, which had just been funded by them, which was a project we were really interested in. So I don't know if that's how you guys got or if how y'all identified them.
Dr. Costello, I think, was in charge of the medical board, and he's a friend of ours from Liam was actually in preschool with one of his sons. So we met him, you know, when Liam was four years old. And it was kind of funny because at the time I was sometimes nervous about, you know, who Liam was playing with and like leaving him somewhere when people weren't familiar with his condition. So I think like when they had their first play date, I was like, why doesn't your son come to our house? And then Dr. Costello's wife came over and she had like a Boston Children's pediatric cardiac ICU sweatshirt on. And then, you know, we started talking and I figured out who her husband was. And so then over the years, he was involved with helping us evaluate research proposals. And then Dr. Nancy Ghanayem is a good friend of ours. Okay. And she's also involved with the Children's Heart Foundation reviewing proposals. And
we interviewed, we did a kind of a research explanation interview with her last week. So yes, I just got to meet Dr. Nancy.
Yeah.
And she's awesome.
Oh, I love Nancy. She took care of Liam before and after all of his surgeries. So, and then she's just been a good friend to us over the years. So like through the guidance of Dr. Ghanayem and Dr. Costello, they advised that we partner with the Children's Heart Foundation. And so we went ahead and did that. We have another fundraiser planned in February, this coming February. You know, so through what we raise at that event, we hope to be able to partner with Children's Heart Foundation again to support additional research.
Okay. Do you guys have a named fund with the Children's Heart Foundation? Or is it give to y'all and y'all give to them?
I think they set it up as just like the Mend a Heart Foundation was the named fund.
Okay.
I think is how they did it.
Okay. Yeah. It's very similar to us. Good. Very good. So you say you've got an event coming up in February. What do you got going on?
We do an event. We call it Heart Fest that we do in February. And typically we try to get around 250, 300 people to the event. And we have dinner, dancing, drinks, auction, raffles, and we do an emotional appeal. And we've always kind of done our event as more of a casual event. You know, if people want to wear jeans, that's fine. Our philosophy has always been, we don't want you going out running or buying a tux and a fancy dress. We'd rather you take that money and give it to the foundation and the cause. So it's usually, you know, more of a casual event. You don't have assigned seating. The past few years, we've done it at a hotel outside Chicago in Oak Brook, Illinois. It's not far from our house. So we got a lot of great support from our local community, as well as other heart families have gotten involved over the years. So we try to just have it be a good time and raise awareness about congenital heart defects and the need for funding.
Good. Good deal. Do you have any kind of like short-term plans or goals and or more long-term plans or goals for the foundation?
I think like from a short-term goal would be to continue to fund Camp O'Dayan and Young Hearts for Life. That's something that each year we give, you know, depending on what their needs are, give to both of those organizations. We've also established a junior board. So we have about 40 high school kids who are involved on our junior board from local area high schools. So that's something that I feel pretty passionate about. I have a good friend of mine who helps me run the junior board. And so through their work, I hope that like we're raising awareness among those high school kids and their families about the importance of congenital heart defect funding. And through the junior board, we raise money. They do a chocolate sale in the fall, and then we use funds from the chocolate sale to buy toys for kids who are in the hospital, in the, you know, the cardiac unit at the hospital. So we give those, like wrap those toys and then donate those for the holidays. So Sunday we have our meeting with the junior board where we'll be wrapping the gifts that we've bought. So from a short-term standpoint, just kind of those little ways we can give back in the short term. And then like from a long-term perspective, I think over the next 4 years, I'd love to hit the $2 million mark in terms of funds that we've raised. And I know like with larger organizations, you know, that's a drop in the bucket for them. But for us, you know, to hit that mark is pretty significant for us. So I would feel good about that. And so through like what we would raise, you know, I'd love to take some of that and find a few more like promising research studies with help from the Children's Heart Foundation that we could help to fund. And I think from long-term as well, like with the junior board, I would love to see a couple of those kids choose to go into the field of medicine or nursing and give back to other heart families. So hopefully we can maybe inspire them to choose that career.
Really cool. Really cool stuff. So what prompted the formation of the junior board?
It really came from my friend Heather and I. When our oldest sons were going into high school, you know, the kids always like help. We always had kids at helping set up for events, selling raffle tickets and things like that over the years. But then when my oldest was entering high school, thinking about colleges, what to put on his resume of involvement, my friend and I just decided to formalize a junior board and, you know, give them a structured way and opportunities and something to put on their resume. But also, you know, we've tried to kind of carve out leadership opportunities within the board to give them some experience, whether it's going out asking for sponsorships or donations to the auction. There's skills that people pick up in doing that, and like having to go out and talk to people and ask for donations. And then, you know, we have people who are helping with social media and then brainstorming ideas for ways at the event to raise money. And then we've actually turned over like the whole check-in and check-out to the junior board. They do a wonderful job greeting guests who come in. And obviously we've got adult supervision overseeing the whole process, but the kids have done a great job and it's been a huge benefit to us to have them helping at events and preparing for the events.
Yeah, the more hands you've got, the better, right?
Yeah, yeah. And also, sometimes it's hard for attendees to say no to a, you know, a high school kid who's trying to sell a raffle ticket.
So that's sort of the organizational goal. What's sort of your hope to accomplish through your work?
I think it's the importance of raising awareness about the prevalence of congenital heart defects is really important, you know, and I think we've done that. I don't think the work is done for you or I or other organizations. Before Liam was born, like, I had no idea that congenital heart defects are the most common type of birth defect. Just no idea. It's important to continue to raise awareness. I would love, hopefully, like, through some of the funding that we've done, that hopefully we figure out, and it's happened since Liam, you know, over the past 17 years, it's happened where the way that heart kids are cared for and treated has improved. But I think there's opportunities to even improve further in how kids are cared for. I don't know if it's going to happen in my lifetime, but hopefully through the research that we've funded and, you know, maybe inspiring people to go into the field of cardiology will motivate someone who's going to go figure out how to find the cause of congenital heart defects, or hopefully figure out maybe there is some way, like in utero, that you can fix the heart defects so that there isn't the need for families and children to go through extensive interventions and surgeries. I don't know. That might be a bit of a pipe dream, but, you know, I just think there's opportunities that we can help to hopefully shape improvements in the way that kids are cared for.
No, I don't think it's a pipe dream. Like you said, I don't know how long it's going to take, but I don't think it's a pipe dream. At least if I did, I wouldn't be doing this. So,
yeah, it was kind of interesting. We had Dr. Mike Earing is a cardiologist. He was in Milwaukee for a long time, and he's now in the Chicago area, and he specializes in taking care of adult congenital heart disease patients. So, but it was interesting because we asked, he came and spoke at a junior board meeting, and we talked about, like, in his time, like, what has been the greatest achievement that's occurred in the field. And he just spoke about the drug that's given to kids who are born with, now I'm drawing a blank on the name of it. You'll know, I'm sure, after they're born with HLHS, they're given that drug to keep before surgery.
Progesterone? To keep the ductus arteriosus open?
Yeah. He's like, before that was discovered, kids could not survive at all. So that allowed time until the kids could have surgery. And so just a simple drug transformed the ability to save kids' lives. So I do think that over the next 20, 40 years, there will have to be additional discoveries like that can transform the way that kids are treated. So I think that's exciting and feels good to be a part of, hopefully helping move the needle forward.
I think it's coming. I think there's a lot of work in a lot of different areas by a lot of organizations, and I think someone will hit it right. And just like you said, you never know what it's going to be that ends up being the next leap forward. Okay, so let's say you've got some parents listening to this, which I hope there are. They want to get involved. What's your recommendation? How would they get involved?
As we've talked about, we have our fundraiser coming up in February. So if, you know, you're in the Chicago area and want to attend the event, we'd love to have you there attending. Also, you know, there's opportunities to sponsor or donate, and that can be done through our website. It's mendaheart.org. We're also 100% volunteer run. So if, you know, there's a family in the area that wants to get involved and help with planning or working the event, that would be great. I also would love to find someone who's willing to share their story about their journey with with having a child with congenital heart disease and like what you've been through. And usually at our events, we like to do an emotional appeal where we have a family share their story or their personal situation, and then kind of use that as a way to enforce with our attendees like why it's important and why there's a need for funding. So if anyone's out there who'd be willing to share their personal story, that would be wonderful. And even, you know, I'm sure we could figure out a way to like live stream you in somehow to the event if you're not in the Chicago area.
Oh yeah, there's ways.
And then even with our junior board, like I love to bring to light for them what it means to have a child with a congenital heart defect or a sibling or, you know, you yourself to have one. So always looking for speakers to share stories with the kids on the junior board. And again, that could be done, you know, if you're here locally or even stream you in, that would be great.
Good deal. Okay, so I have a curveball question. I've noticed, and one of the reasons we started this podcast is because I routinely see people who have gotten the diagnosis in the child, and maybe the cardiologist they spoke to hadn't seen anything in the last 20 years, all of the advancements, and basically told them there's no hope, right? It's just not going to be a good life for them. So my question for you is, if you had somebody who had been a parent who had been given that diagnosis, what would you say to them?
When we found out about Liam, we found out at our 20-week ultrasound that he had this serious condition. We went to a cardiologist nearby right after we got the diagnosis. And I think we got all this information because if we wanted to end the pregnancy, we needed to make the decision quickly. So, you know, we were told that babies with his condition die on the operating table, which is true. And so, you know, we immediately had to decide whether or not we wanted to keep the pregnancy. And we had to make that decision, I think, within like 2 weeks. So for us, we chose to see the pregnancy through. But after we made that decision, then like we started looking at different heart centers in the US and talking to different surgical teams. And so that's something I would highly recommend, is that if you have this diagnosis, that you explore the different heart centers that are out there, because there are some that I think do a better job of saving these kids because they do more of these surgeries on an annual basis. So you may need to travel to take care of your baby. And I know that's not always possible for every family, just from a practical standpoint of having kids at home, maybe not having the support or the financial means to do that. But if you can, I would recommend like really looking at all of the heart centers that are out there. And you can even do that. You know, we had phone calls with different surgeons, and you can send the initial like echocardiograms that are done can be sent to surgeons, and you can have phone calls. And then we visited Milwaukee, and we visited Ann Arbor and Michigan, and talked to Chicago. We talked to someone, I think, out at UCLA and out in Boston. And just from a practical standpoint, we ended up choosing to go to Milwaukee, which was about a 2-hour drive from our house. And even when we, like the first time we went and met with the team, we spent only 8 hours where they walked through what was going to happen when we delivered Liam. And then at the end of the day, it was a guy who works in the intensive care unit. You know, he's like, I'm sure no one's told you, but like another option that you have is just, I think it's palliative care, where you know, you decide that you deliver the baby and then you choose not to treat the baby. And we asked him, if it was your baby, what would you do? And I just remember him saying, like, I don't know. And I think for us, that was like tough to think that someone who takes care of these kids might choose not to go through with what we were planning to do. But like, I remember we walked out and we decided that we thought our kid was going to be a fighter. So we ended up, you know, electing to go through with the surgeries, obviously. And so I don't know, I think you are faced with like really tough decisions when you have a kid that's sick or you're expecting a baby that's going to be born with serious condition like Liam was. So it's not easy, but I would just say that I think that you've got to find the best center and the best people to take care of your baby. And I do think that there's hope. It's not easy for everyone, and I don't judge anyone who chooses a different route than the one that we chose. And I remember when I was expecting our third son, Liam had his third surgery. So I was, I don't know, I think I was maybe 6 months pregnant with Seamus, our third, when Liam was having that third surgery. And I remember going into, like, at the time, like, there was a parent's room where you could check the computer. And, you know, there were other moms who were there with their, I think there were two moms and their kids were having the first surgery. And I was just like, I don't know if I could do this again, you know, starting from square one. So I don't know. I guess my point being that it's not an easy thing to go through. And, you know, I'm 17 years out. So my worries are different now about Liam. Like, as he starts, he's a junior in high school, and now we're starting to look at, he's going to leave our house and like go out on his own. So like, that's a whole different set of worries and fears. But, you know, at first you just like worry that your kid, are they going to be breathing when you go to pick him up from his nap or in the morning? Those were the fears like early on. And like, are they going to make it to the next surgery? And it's not easy, but you know, I have a beautiful 17-year-old son who I'm really glad that we made the decision that we made. And our world has been opened up in ways that we never would have. We've experienced people and things and that we never would have had we not had Liam and not been through what we've been through. You know, we see the generosity of people on an annual basis, people who give generously of their money. There's people that give generously of their time to help support research. And then there's also, like, within the heart community, all those cardiologists who are evaluating medical proposals, they're doing that in their free time because they believe in helping all of these children. So it's like a very enriching experience to have been able to meet, interact, help, support, like, that whole community. And even just within our neighborhood, like, there's been people that are basement flooded the day after Liam had his first surgery.
Oh, gosh.
And, you know, like some man I don't even know him, like, came over and he heard about our situation and pumped it out. So there's just people that you encounter that there's so much heaviness in the world right now, and you know, there always will be, but I think through our experience, we've been able to see a lot of beauty and good that I'm not sure that we would have seen as clearly had we not had Liam and been through what we've been through. So I don't know, long-winded answer. I just think if you are expecting a child with a serious, whether it's a heart issue or some other type of health condition, I don't think you're alone. There's other people that have been through this experience that are going through it on a daily basis. So I think you shouldn't feel alone, but I do think you need to do your research and find the best place that's feasible for you to go and have treatment for your child. And then you have to like hand over your child, and it becomes out of your control. But once you've found where you think is the best place to have your child treated, you know, you have to put faith in your medical community or your medical team that they're going to do the best that they can for your child. And I know that there's families that have, I don't know if there's anyone listening to this that have lost a child who's been born with congenital heart disease, but you know, I hope that having gone through the experience you've gone through, I think that you've been touched by the community and the medical teams that you've worked with. So even though maybe the outcome wasn't what you wanted, hopefully like your lives have been changed in a way that you might appreciate the support that is around you. So I hope that answers your question, Patrick.
It does. It does. Thank you very much, Bridget. I do very appreciate the honesty and the way in which you answered. It was very from the heart. And I do appreciate that. And thank you for answering the question. I know it's a curveball, and I know it can be a hard one. So thank you very much. The final question, which I always ask, slightly less of a curveball. If I find myself in Chicagoland, where do I have to go eat?
We love this restaurant. It's called the Chicago Pizza and Oven Grinder. It's downtown in the Lincoln Park area. It's a small little restaurant that there's always a waiting. Like you have to wait a couple hours, but they did start, I think like after COVID, you can start making a reservation online. But they offer their pizza in like a pot, like a little pot, like a pot pan. And they're upside down and they cook them. And then when they come to the table, they cut them out and put them on a plate for you. They turn them over and they're so good. And then they have this med bread. So it's this flat bread that you just tear apart with this great seasoning and then mix it with these salad dressings that they give you. And it's so good. So that's our favorite restaurant, and our kids have grown up going there and like love going there when we go into the city. So I would check that out.
Okay. So what was it? Was it
Chicago Pizza and Oven Grinder?
Chicago Pizza and Oven Grinder. Okay. That's on the list.
So it's on, I think it's on Clark.
Okay.
Close to like the Lincoln Park Zoo. So okay. If you're like visiting the zoo and you could head over. So yeah, definitely check that out.
Good deal. Thank you very much for joining us today. I really appreciate all the work you do, all the work Mend a Heart Foundation does, the work you do with your partner organizations, and the work you've done over the past 15 years or so, and the work you do with your son as a mother. I mean, it's inspiring to folks like us who come later, right, to see the kind of strength and hope and dedication you have. So I very much appreciate it all.
Well, thanks for having me, Patrick. I appreciate what you're doing with this podcast and raising awareness, and thank you.
You're very welcome.
Thank you again, dear listener, for joining us for this episode of Sharing the Hope from the Micah Mason Foundation and our conversation with Bridget O'Meara with the Mend a Heart Foundation. If you'd like to know more about Mend a Heart, head to the website, mendaheart.org. And if you'd like to support the podcast, head on over to micahmasonfoundation.org and click on the donate button. I'm your host, Patrick Mason, and thank you for joining us again for Sharing the Hope.